to Androids and Assets. I'm Steven.
And I'm Marshall.
And this is the show where we talk about the political economy of speculative fiction. That is, how decisions are made, how wealth is distributed, and who gets to own a two-story home on a deserted island populated with the victims of labor trafficking.
Today we are joined by games scholar extraordinaire and comrade of the show, Katarina, to discuss Animal Crossing New Horizons. Welcome, Kat.
Thank you for having me.
So, Kat, you sent us a very interesting article.
I'm just going to introduce and say that as a game studies scholar, I'm a part of an association, and we have our own journal in which to publish what we research and work on. And a colleague of mine, Rain Forrest, he and a friend of his, Emily, edited a special edition of Animal Crossing for our journal Loading. And the article in particular we want to talk about is Dr. Emma Vossen's article, Tom Nook, Capitalist or Comrade? And in it, she talks about kind of like the memed idea of Tom Nook as this character. Is he, you know, a capitalist that's going to bust your kneecaps if you don't pay your debt on time? Or is he a comrade because he maybe, you know, treats you with a little more decency and respect despite being, you know, an anthropomorphized tanuki?
Tom's got shareholders he has to answer to. And if he's not delivering surplus value.
Which is interesting because we never hear about them when he's talking about lending you money to build a house and then recruits you to be, you know, his lackey and do, you know, all the actual work on the island. He just hangs out in his little residence services town hall looking building and just sends you out to do his dirty work. You find a place to like construct these homes. You find a place for this like infrastructure. I'll provide the money, but you do the work and you'll get very little in return.
I think the reason though is like it's 2020 when the game came out. So Tom actually couldn't leave the island to go to any shareholder meetings in person. So he had to take them all by Zoom in his office.
So I think we should maybe, for the benefit of listeners who maybe haven't played Animal Crossing, and I think we kind of did this already, but kind of sum up what how Animal Crossing is, maybe what its significance was. Because if you weren't on Twitter in 2020, then you might not understand. What happens in Animal Crossing and why is it important culturally as a game?
It's been a series for about 20-ish years. Our friend Brian describes Animal Crossing as Chores the Game. So in every edition, there is some form of community that you as a playable character live in and work to maintain, hence the chores. And you're always working for Tom Nook. You might do favors for other NPCs, like other island or villagers or islanders, but ultimately it's Tom Nook who you answer to. And so in this edition of Animal Crossing, which people were very excited about coming out before everything hit the fan in North America, but ultimately the planned release date for Animal Crossing New Horizons was remarkably lucky, considering the global shit show in terms of like how the pandemic hit Europe and North America, kind of, well, North America more in March, which is when Animal Crossing came out. So everyone's kind of stuck at home. We don't know how long this pandemic is going to be, how long we're going to be stuck in isolation. And so suddenly you can go into this video game world where you're perpetually on vacation. You can go visit your friends on their island, which you can't do in real life because the pandemic passes from like human interaction. So the game came at a very special moment where people were desperate to escape from the real world and enter into this simulacrum of vacation and, you know, essentially retirement.
Yeah, it's FIRE the game. Financial independence, retire early.
You go to like an island country with a currency that can buy pretty much anything on a day's labor.
One of the things we did, we tilted at this then, is you go to this island, but it's the property of this capitalist, Tom Nook. And as soon as you arrive, he indebts you 50,000 bells, which is the money in the game, right? I actually haven't played it, so.
And I've played a lot of it. You're indebted to basically to Tom Nook for your survival on this island. When you first get to the island, it's very idyllic and undeveloped in the conventional sense. So there are spiders or scorpions that can poison you. I mean, you don't die in Animal Crossing, but you get knocked out. And then you need medicine. You need tools to help build up your island, but building those tools takes resources. You gain small benefits by further developing the island for more villagers to move to the island and create this community. And so if you do, you cannot progress further in the game without paying off your debt. And then you can take on another debt to further expand your homestead.
Sure.
Your settler colonial dream.
This is what got us onto doing this episode, right? I think someone tweeted at us. I think it was Hugo Girl tweeted at us, right, Marshall? And they were like, they were playing Animal Crossing, and they were like, hey, you guys need to check this out. And I asked Marshall what was going on, and he's like, he explained the premise to me. I was like, oh man, that's indentured servitude. That's debt peonage.
Part of the memeing of Tom Nook, right? Like, it's this joke that he owned you. And if we go back to Emma's article, it's the idea that he's literally a cartoon villain. It's a lot easier to project frustrations of the economic realities as a millennial in her case, or as Gen Z for a younger group's case, of we don't have economic stability in the same way that previous generations did. And so there are somewhat similarities in the sense that we're indebted to the man. You know, we gotta work to pay off our debt. Goodness knows, I wish that my student loans and mortgage didn't have interest, unlike Tom Nook's life, where it's like, I'm not gonna charge interest out of the goodness of my heart. Pay back whenever. Yeah, that's not real life. And when you realize real life is way worse, it's infuriating.
Ostensibly, Tom Nook puts you in a condition that we know of as indentured servitude / debt peonage. So what that means is that you have made a deal with someone to work for them, and typically you have some sort of debt associated with that. Typically, historically, I think it's been you're being transmitted from one society to another, or you're going to receive some sort of outsized benefit down the line. This was often the case in European colonialism, right? Where, you know, a lower class person, an Irish, a lower class person or of a lower social order in the United Kingdom would be moved to a colony, right? And they would have to work off essentially their debt for that. This is what's happening in Animal Crossing. One of the other ways that takes shape, though, is in something called debt peonage, right? Wherein you are structured into your debt in such a way that your debt kind of owns you, and your debtors have a whole bunch of influence in your life. Indentured servitude is because you have is a deal, I guess, kind of, they're very similar, and it's a very nuanced difference, but in indenture, you're kind of signing a deal for your indenture and the terms of your indenture. Debt peonage can kind of just happen to you, right? You can kind of just get to a place where you are in your debt and you get in too deep and all of a sudden your life is being restructured by the nature of your debt. And I think this is a very common condition in the world today.
Yeah, I think part of it is, speaking as a millennial, we were told, you know, go to university, that'll help you get a good job. Well, to go to university, you got to take out a student loan. Well, so we all do that. After university, a lot of us were experiencing the last crash of 2008, and we were struggling to get jobs. And so we had all this ridiculous debt, and it's like, okay, now what? And we're told, oh, you need, you know, for this entry-level job, 5 years work experience as well as a degree. And it's like, okay. So when my parents applied for equivalent jobs levels, once they were done university, there wasn't that sort of restriction. So you get kind of sucked into this, like, these ridiculous student loan rates and debt, which is significantly greater than previous generations. And we're kind of just left floating going, what do we do now? Like,
yeah, and kind of as public institutions have gotten eroded and as capital is concentrated, you kind of get this, a lot of people are finding themselves in really over their head. So I have a quote here from David Harvey that he gave, and I think kind of sums up the situation. So he says, you organize debt peonage in such a way as to lock people in, and then they have to pay. But you don't take the money away from the bondholders. I mean, in the case of Greece, for example, it wasn't as if anybody went to the French and German banks who lent the money to Greece. They kind of basically socialized their debt, turned it over to the IMF and the European Stability Fund and all the rest of it, and then made the Greeks pay. Well, actually, if the banks made a bad judgment, they should pay, but they didn't. And this is the neoliberal principle at work.
This example of like Greece going into debt and then the French and the Germans, you know, these banks should be taking a loss because they lent money to somebody who can't pay it back. Instead, they just passed laws saying, nah, Greece has to pay it back no matter what. And that's what has happened with student loans as well, right? The idea that if you have too much debt and bad things happened, you should be able to declare bankruptcy and say, I'm insolvent. I can't do this. Sorry, but you guys all lose your money. And banks take that and they go, oh, well, that sucks, but, you know, put that in the loss column. Student loans are legislated as to not be affected when you declare bankruptcy. So you get in over your head and you're in a bad spot. And then you're like, oh, crap, I have to declare bankruptcy. And you come out of it still with debt, mountains of debt. And it's the same as what they've done to Greece, where they're sort of like, well, we don't want to not get rid of that debt. It's very effective for us to leave you in that debt. So we will, perpetually.
Yeah, and so now the core European countries have kind of made economic colonies out of the southern European countries of Spain, Greece, and Italy.
And a lot less drastically, Animal Crossing isn't a whole hell of a lot different, because there's no negotiating with Tom Nook and your debt. It's you pay off your debt or you stop playing the game.
You can't file for bankruptcy protection from Tom
Nook? You can't file. There's no bankruptcy protection. There's no way to appeal it. It's you play the game or you don't. It is one of the main mechanics of the game is you work to pay off your debt. Chores the game, except it's debt the game.
Sure. And Tom Nook is the sole authority on this island, right? Like, his office is in Town Hall. Ostensibly, he is also the government.
Yeah, it's the government, the bank, and I don't know, the judicial system all in one.
It's a neoliberal wet dream.
So here's this game where people are under experiencing the neoliberal wet dream, but it's pretty nice.
This is the thing. It's not a true neoliberal wet dream because no neoliberal is that generous to be like, yeah, pay the debt back whenever, no interest. That's neoliberalism is much worse than Tom Nook.
Yeah, so it's essentially like, neoliberal capitalism hollowed out of all its malignancies and vindictiveness, and then set in a very idyllic and pastoral setting.
It's what neoliberals want us to think capitalism is. It's not reality at all. And the simulacrum with, like, this inaccurate simulacrum of capitalism proves that. Because there are certain signs of capitalism that are missing, and they're pretty damn drastic. And when they're missing, it kind of points out just how much worse real capitalism is. Because, yeah, there's interest on your debt. Yeah, you can't just turn off the game of capitalism and opt out and no longer play. We're kind of stuck in it right now. And we're stuck in this debt, and we're stuck with these interest rates, and we're stuck on these timelines. And like Animal Crossing, there's no negotiating for the most part.
You're not going to unionize.
If only.
And this is kind of the core contention that Dr. Vossen is positing, right?
I mean, it's who is Tom Nook and what does he symbolize? Like, what does he truly symbolize? And what does that symbol mean? And what can you do with that symbol? And so she takes a autoethnographic approach, which is basically she talks a lot about her own life with the context of Animal Crossing. Emma lives in Toronto. Toronto rent and home ownership are terrifying. Just look, like, it's like almost like over $2,000 a month for like the average like one bedroom apartment rental in Toronto. Home ownership, you know, you would need like two salaries of over like six figures to even probably qualify to buy a sketchy home. It's not really a feasible dream for a lot of millennials, even a lot of Gen Xers probably at this point. And then you go into this simulated world where it is possible. I mean, you don't get to negotiate any of the terms of this reality, but you can choose to be there.
Yeah, but this reality is structured by a benevolent individual.
Exactly. And generally speaking, capitalism aims to make money. Tom Nook isn't making money, technically, because he's not charging interest.
So I have a lot. I think we have a lot more to say about this. But I do think there is also one other facet of this game from an economics perspective, which is super interesting. And Marshall, do you want to talk about the stock market? Or the stock with an L market?
Yeah. Yeah. So the stock market is it's an interesting thing that they included in the game. So it's stock STALK, as in like the stock, like vegetables or plants that have stocks. They have included a mechanism by which you can purchase turnips on Sunday mornings. And then throughout the week, Monday through Saturday, you're able to go to the Nookling store, Nook and Cranny. Nook's Cranny? Nook's Cranny. Nook's Cranny. Very
which is
clever.
Tom Nook's retail division.
Yeah, I don't know if it's his retail division or if it's his nephew's retail division.
Or, the Nook Empire.
Or like if they own it or if they are just employed by him to manage it for him. If you know, it's like a if they're the principals, you know.
Principal agent problem. Got it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You purchase the turnips on Sunday morning, and then throughout the week you look for a favorable price. Ideally you are able to sell those turnips for more than you paid to get them. In some ways, I think it was the intention in terms of like game mechanics was just to get people to be on the game because the price changed three or four times in a day. So you would have to check back frequently to get the best price.
It introduces chronology and time to a game that is kind of timeless.
Yeah, in some ways, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. And especially because your turnips will go bad. So, like, whereas with Tom Nook, you have unlimited time to repay him. If you don't sell your turnips in 6 days, they're gone. And that's kind of a wasted investment. So your bells just sort of disappear. And it is a way for you to, like, you can make a quick buck off of it, right? If you find a favorable price, you spend some bells, you get some bells, and then maybe you can, you know, pay off another room in your house, which is, you know, that's the dream of investment, right? And you just make a small investment, pay it off you buy low, sell high, and pay for a new room on your house. That's the what we're sold on. So through the magic of the internet, though, people created turnip.exchange. And through this online exchange, you can let people know what price the Nooklings are buying turnips on your island. And this makes it, you know, increases your odds of getting a good price, is that you can just go onto Turnip Exchange, find a price that you are willing to accept, wait in line to visit an island, and sell your turnips somewhere else. You can avoid the whole problem of having to go back to the game regularly to find out if you're getting a good price or if you're going to get hosed. And you can make a huge amount of bells in a very short amount of time just by exploiting the game mechanic that they've introduced. And I don't think they ever intended to say, oh, yeah, you should, you know, collaborate with every single person who has this game and is willing to, you know, go onto the exchange, right? It was supposed to be, you know, like yourself and your friends and whatever. But they allowed this to happen, that people can just cheat the stock market and get a lot of bells.
It's an interesting paratextual response to capitalism in this game at its most irrational. So, like, you haven't, like, the prices fluctuate on your own island daily. They fluctuate elsewhere. And there's no rhyme or reason. All the turnips are the same. Like, there's really no different. And the Nooklings on every island are the same. So there's no reason why. They can't even really justify why there's different prices in different markets. And people saw this as unfair and responded accordingly. And their response was, we're going to find a way to break the magic circle. And I should explain, the magic circle is this idea in play or gaming, that this idea that you enter into a game space and you can enter out of it into the real world. Like, they're two separate spaces. Study scholar Mia Consalvo has argued that there is no magic circle. We take our real world realities and bring them into the game. And in her landmark article, she specifically talks about cheating and how people will find cheats to circumvent what they see as being unfair or difficult circumstances in a game. And that's the same thing here, is people are breaking the magic circle of capitalism and the stock market. And it's pointing out that we don't seem to have the mechanisms to do that in capitalism in the real world. We're using the real world to break game capitalism. Wait a second. It's even worse outside.
Well, the people organized to defeat the information asymmetry that allowed the market to function, or the I guess actually what's a game mechanic really more than a market function.
It's actually a market failure, right?
Yeah, it's a market failure.
That information asymmetry is a huge market failure that exists in the real world and is defeated. So that's great.
Yeah, and it would correct itself in the real world.
Well, yeah, and it you know, you can find the price of any stock at any time in any market very easily on the internet, right? So that information asymmetry is mostly gone. Now it's just a matter of, like, how quickly you can get that information, and that's the challenge. Do you have, like, a direct link with the New York Stock Exchange, or do you have to wait for it to be mediated by somebody else? I think though the nefarious thing about the stock market and defeating it and saying like, oh yeah, well you just make an investment. You know, I can make a relatively small investment. When I first started playing the game, I bought a whole bunch of turnips, and it was a relatively small investment of, you know, 100,000 bells or something like that, which in terms of the game is relatively easy to accumulate 100,000 bells. And then I was able to exchange those for several million bells through the turnip exchange, and I could quickly expand my house. So I, like, I remember I was like, I just had a single room house, and then I went to a 3-bedroom house like immediately, and sort of like skipped over a lot of the development in the game that you're supposed to like take some time to build your house because you have to get the money. And I think this is a little bit nefarious when you compare it to the actual stock market, because people who are experiencing poverty are often given the advice like, oh, well, you just need to save some and invest that money, and then you can become wealthy. As if the trick of poverty is that they had poor money management, not that they've been locked into a cycle of debt peonage.
And that everyone has the same access to resources is another huge one. Yeah. In Animal Crossing New Horizons, everyone's stuck on relatively equivalent islands. Like, I think there's 4 different maps to choose from. There's certain different fruits that'll be, you know, native to your island. But for the most part, everyone starts out pretty equal. It's not like on one island, their starting debt to Tom Nook is more and yours is less. Everyone starts out at the same level with their bootstraps.
Well, yeah, and everyone is existing in a state of, like, you're not deducted bells daily for your provision. Like, theoretically, I mean, you don't need to eat because you're a video game character, but theoretically, Tom Nook is providing you canned food and soap or whatever, like, you know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and the island also has, like, unlimited resources that allow you to accumulate that initial investment into the stock market, right? Like, you can go out and collect enough branches and weeds and fruit and, you know, bugs and fish and whatever you need to sell to get that $100,000 to turn into $4 million. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're laughing. Good luck doing that in the real world, right? Because everything is monetized and everything is enclosed. So you can't just go out and find branches on a tree that you can harvest for free to then go sell to a store, you know. That just is not going to happen.
Wait, are you telling me that the sticks I'm planning to take to Don Iveson tomorrow won't net me a discount on my student loan debt?
That'll be 48 bells. Show up with a wheelbarrow full of sticks.
I'll take it at this point. I will take that 48 bells at this point.
So... okay, so then there's like, so there's notion of like, speaking of like, Tom Nook is willing to pay you like, regardless of who owns the island, when you gather things, you're selling your labor piecemeal to Tom Nook, largely in terms of what you bring him, right? He's not providing you a wage.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, you get a piece rate for what you've cleaned up in the island. And it's interesting that it's considered sort of like cleaning the island, that it's like, oh, yeah, you got rid of the weeds and you got rid of the sticks and you cleaned up the beach of all the shells and you fished all of the natural fish out of the rivers and oceans and good job cleaning up. Here's your payment.
Settler colonialism, the game.
It's very antagonistic to ecology. That is actually one of the things that, like, because the concept is that this island, which, you know, all ecosystems do exist for reasons, needs to be turned into something cool, you know,
and sanitized.
Yeah, we paved paradise, put up a parking lot, or in this case, we captured all the bugs and put them in a museum.
Yeah, because you actually have to extinct some species. Like, reducing the biodiversity of this island is actually an important.
Yeah, it actually is. So, one mechanic is two of the more rare critters to capture. are the tarantula and the scorpion. They do not spawn in islands that are more developed. You kind of need a certain amount of empty space, unnatural, undeveloped space for those critters to spawn in the game. Otherwise, like if you overdevelop your island, they don't spawn. And then you have to travel to other islands to try and capture these things so you can put them in your museum to show off the biodiversity of your island.
In your Victorian nature cabinet of extinct species, right? So it's not all bad news, though, right, Sarah? Because you're saying there is, like, some element. Like, there is, although you can't form a union and you can't rebel against Tom Nook, there is some element by which players in their collective role as indentured servants do have some commonalities with each other.
I mean, like, the Turnip Exchange response to the stock market is most definitely one variation on that. It is a sort of collectivization and a response to, well, I don't want to be, you know, left with rotten turnips and losing money in this ridiculous scenario. Let's band together and work for a common good. Sort of idea that, like, altruism is one of the gameplay mechanics. Like, being kind and building community gets you benefits in the game. So visiting other people, sending them letters, giving them gifts, giving your villagers gifts, nets you certain boons in the game. Namely, it's Nook Miles tickets, or Nook Miles that you can then spend on tickets or other items. But it's this idea of building community and kindness becomes this gameplay mechanic. So there's a lot, not only are there benefits to that, but they also make it very difficult to be a poor community member. It's possible. I'm recalling one villager that I had who she said something mean to one of my favorite villagers. And so one of the gameplay mechanics is if two villagers have a fight, you try to act as the intermediary to repair the relationship.
You manage them as a manager. Yeah.
So, however, this one villager who is already on my shit list for walking through my flower garden, because that was a very carefully maintained flower garden, she hurt the feelings of my favorite villager. And that was just like the last straw for me. So I was actively trying to make that villager want to leave the island. So I was like fencing her into her home so she couldn't leave. And so I couldn't run into her. Or I would allow Marshall to hit her with the net. Because you can cause them kind of pain and get them really upset if you hit them any two times with the bug net. But for the most part, you're trying to be kind. You're trying to build community. You're trying to be helpful.
Except when you have to fire people for
their
performance, for failing to meet the performance expectations.
Yeah, except when Miranda is being absolutely evil, tromping through your flowers and being rude to Bianca for no reason. Bianca is precious little butterfly. Why would you be mean to her?
Part of it's important to be kind to other players.
Yes.
You don't have to be kind to your subordinate villagers.
Yes. I think not being kind to other players would, to a certain extent, be quote-unquote breaking the rules of the game. So, for example, it's extremely difficult to commit theft as a mechanic in the game. It's possible, but it's difficult. It's not like other RPG video games where theft is extremely common.
Yep. Theft or homicide.
Yeah. No, like I think of a lot of the other RPGs that I've played, like The Witcher, Fallout. Right now we're playing Divinity 2, Original Sin. Theft is a common mechanic to proceed in the game and to collect resources, acquire wealth, and make life easier in the game. It's very difficult to do that in Animal Crossing. It is possible because it has been done. I've witnessed someone else commit theft.
It was accidental. I didn't know what I was doing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and there's really no benefit to it, right? Because sure, you could get some stuff and then sell some bells. You get some bells, but you know, like,
it's pretty minor.
Well, yeah, and the other thing about it is that again, you're living on a deserted small island with unlimited natural resources, right? Like, the only limit to these resources is the amount of time that you put in to get them. So sure, like I stole 30 clay from somebody and I feel terrible about it. I wake up at night in a cold sweat thinking, how am I ever going to repay these 30 clay? But then I remember they didn't even notice.
Yeah.
And they have more clay. It doesn't matter. Like, there is more clay to be had.
And there will always be more clay. Right. For as much as
exactly,
they care to
yeah.
extract it. Right.
Yes. If they keep attempting to get more clay, they will get more clay. There is no limit. You know, you're not going to find that your clay quarry has run dry and you need to move on to a new island and start extracting from there. New rocks will show up on your island in the morning and you can crack them open and get the clay. Or you can visit a brand new idyllic island, of which there are an infinite number of them. And harvest them for clay.
Jeff Bezos, the video game, where you cosplay as a billionaire with unlimited resources and wealth, and you can just do whatever the hell you want.
Well, no, it's worse. You cosplay as the middle manager for Jeff Bezos, and that gives you license to do whatever the fuck you want. And isn't it great to be a bannerman to the king?
Look, I'm working for Jeff here, so just get out of the way. I got some trees to chop down. I don't care who owns them. Jeff does.
To me, this whole conversation is very reminiscent of the workplace culture at Netflix. Hear me out. Because Netflix...
I've never worked there.
We're going to have to hear you out because we don't understand.
Well, there's several books published about it. Netflix is kind of seen as like a visionary... Yeah, so Reed Hastings is the kind of CEO of Netflix. And he's kind of this like... And he's a really big part of cultivating Netflix's like workplace culture, and they have this whole theory of it and whole conception of human nature. And Netflix is really structured on this idea that like they kind of take that CEO model of like, you are a high performance piece of machinery. You need to be, you know, you need to work hard and be richly rewarded. Lay it all on the line for the company, right? But they take that logic and then they transfer it down completely through their ranks, down to like their admin staff. So their thing is like, yeah, come on, work for us, work till you burn out or whatever. You know, there's high turnover, they have high wages, they have generous severance packages. And the concept is nobody works at Netflix forever. That you go and you give them like theoretically your best. And when that's done, you're done, right? At the top, then the hobby is like being on Netflix is like such a great reward. And being on Netflix makes you elite and incredible in some way. And Netflix has you because you are special. And then internally, and then it gets really weird because then Netflix practices this weird internal like version of a Maoist struggle session, which I think it's called sunshining or sunrise, sunshining. Yeah, where people have to like publicly be like berated by their coworkers for mistakes they've made, and they have to like publicly assume responsibility, and they have like large meetings, and they'll sometimes people be fired. Like in these sessions, like I should be like, so everyone will like, everyone will tell you why you're a piece of shit, and then your boss will tell you you're fired, and it's hell. But and that's not reminiscent of Animal Crossing, but the antecedent aspects.
I was
of
sitting
it,
here
like,
going like, I am so lost, Steven. I know you'll get there, and I'll understand one day, but
I'm
sitting here going like. Nook Inc. is Netflix?
Well, like, Nook Inc. is the first part of that idea, right? And that we're a great company who cares about our people and wants to give them everything, and they are going to give us their everything also. You're going to enter into the Tom Nook ecology, and like a feudal lord, we will provide you with everything you desire, and you will in turn give me your fealty, right? And that's really the Tom Nook promise. But then it never is actually seen up to its logical, tyrannical, and horrific conclusions, as it is in the case of Netflix.
I mean, yeah, like in some ways, I see what you're saying. I don't know that I ever really like gave like fealty to Tom Nook, right? He is more like a monopolist who I don't have any other options. Like if I could sell my goods somewhere else, I would. But I can't.
You know, what if we didn't have to pay back a debt at all? What if there was no debt? What if we didn't need to sell stuff? What if we went from anarcho-capitalist Tom Nook to anarcho-communist Animal Crossing?
And what would the functional difference be there then? Like there would be just the abolition of the debt.
Yeah, the abolition of currency.
Right.
Well, maybe, okay, I'm hurting Marshall when I say that. More like... I know.
Barter for everything.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Bartering would be great. Trading would be great. But, like, we just wouldn't have debt. Or if we'd have a debt, it would be something we could actually negotiate on a smaller scale and actually live more as a community and support one another. Like, everything would go towards a common good. Like, we would all work together to build the bridge. It's not, I pick the spot for the bridge. My villagers maybe put in 1,000 bells total for the bridge that costs over 100,000 bells. So if I ever want that bridge built, I'm the one paying for it.
Except there's no
Tom
money
Nook.
Because this is ANCOM, so...
Yeah, so I'm just saying it would not be that.
And shovel.
It would just be the villagers and I collecting resources and working together to build the bridge, as opposed to hiring Lloyd, the contractor, to build the bridge and paying him.
And then presumably you as fronting capital to pay Lloyd, then being able to extract a toll.
Yeah.
Not that none of that happens in Animal Crossing.
No.
But
if anything, the villagers like put a toll on you by flopping their butts down in the middle of the bridge for no good reason, and then you're stuck on one side of the bridge. Hmm. Like they'll just that's a meme. Like they will just sit down in your way all the time, and it's often on bridges for no good reasons. Like why are you sitting in the middle of the bridge?
Better views.
Just Miranda's evil.
Not a phone
Miranda
in sight.
Miranda is an evil, pink, evil pink duck. I hate Miranda.
Like when I said, like it's a bit of a neoliberal wet dream. Some of it also seems to kind of go that way, right? Like it's like, oh yeah, we don't really have a government. We just have a business, and they run the island according to their business interests. And there's no real market, right? Like there's no market outside of the island. You just sell to other people on the island and you buy from other people on the island from the store. But there's no like globalized market because you have everything you need right here. Why would you ever need globalization, right? You don't need globalization. It's all just at home. And you don't need a job because your job is, reaping and sowing fruit and, you know, redoing the island and cleaning up the island and building things and selling those things. Like, it's a very much like a cottage industry. You know, going back to this, like primitivist sort of view, right? You don't need to have other people.
To depend. You don't need to have slaves to have your plantation. You can have a plantation without slaves, and you can be constantly perfecting and shaping the land into your idyllic environment.
What's the term? The scales of economies of scale.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of. Like, you don't need economies of scale in Animal Crossing because, you know, you're just producing for yourself and that's it. So you don't need, you know, skilled artisans who can produce lots of stuff for cheaper than what you can produce it, and then you purchase it from them. Just build it yourself. Somebody will show you how to make it, and then you can go home and gather the supplies and make it yourself. You don't need anybody else. You just need you, your own tenacity.
Yeah, self-sufficiency.
That's right. That's also what I sort of mean is, like, this island is a bit of like a neoliberal wet dream of, like, there is no globalization. There's just you, and it's only as good as you make it, and it's up to you entirely.
You, a free person, hewing your will out of reality, out of the soil, out of the digital
exactly.
soil.
Exactly.
What was that?
Yeah, exactly. I'm totally agreeing.
This is really my whole takeaway, and this is, I think, when we're planning this, we came to this as kind of a live question for us. So I'm not speaking for anyone else other than myself when I say this. But to me, I think Žižek's idea of decaffeination is, I think, really salient here. So Slavoj Žižek, you know, Slovenian guy. I think we talked about him when we had Mav on the show a little bit. He's in some ways a problematic figure, but I think he's a very interesting kind of contemporary philosopher, public intellectual, although he's less public these days. But he kind of talks about this idea of decaffeination, which is that, you know, one of the functions of ideology is to present you the things that you would want, but devoid of the malignancies or bad things in them. So I'm going to read a quote from Žižek's book, The Puppet and the Dwarf. On today's market, we find a whole series of products deprived of their malignant property. Cream without fat. Beer without alcohol. Decaffeinated coffee. Virtual sex. Sex without sex. Warfare without casualties. Our side, of course. Or war without war. And I think that's kind of a little bit what's going on here, where in, you know, what is being offered up is decaffeinated neoliberalism, right? You can, you know, you only have to provide for yourself and hew what you will out of the earth, but you can also go to IKEA and buy a credenza.
Yes. I think that is absolutely one takeaway and a danger. But, and I love this term, and I read it in this paper the first time, Animal Crossing New Horizon can also be a bit of a bread pill in that even just looking at the discourse online, people are not happy with Tom Nook, right? He is almost universally reviled. And I think that is reassuring that people look at this and go, this is capitalism with its malignancy removed. It still sucks. And if capitalism with its malignancy removed is bad, capitalism without its malignancy removed is even worse. If I want to reform this game because it's bad, how should I feel about the real world, right? Like, if Tom Nook as a boss gives me all the autonomy I want and never demands that I pay him back on time, and I still want to, like, send him to a guillotine, I should probably want to send every billionaire to a guillotine.
Where do you weigh in on the bread pill versus decaffeination argument?
I think I can see value in both perspectives. I mean, I would lean towards the bread pill more because I am all about using simulacra as an entry point for discussion about our real world condition. But I would, if we're going to, you know, bring in academic, theoretical, philosophical quotes, I would go a little bit more post-structuralist and bring in a little good old-fashioned Deleuze and say, for it is not the elements of symmetry present which matter for artistic or natural causality, but those which are missing. So what is missing in Animal Crossing for the simulation of capitalism? And so that's what I would argue. What's missing for this simulation? And that's what's important. And what's missing is it's a lot, like a lot of things that make capitalism really fucking bad. In the fact that you can't opt out of the game of capitalism the way our world stands. You can in the game. You can't in the real world. And I think that's the important point for me. And I think that's kind of where I would start to lean a little more to the bread pill.
So with that, I guess we'll leave it to the listener to mull over, to decide how they feel about Animal Crossing. Is it a bread-pilling tool of the revolution? Or is it decaffeinated, ideologically driven neo-naive paternalism? We'll let you to decide.
Our live studio audience is going to judge by clapping.
Yeah, vote with texting your phone. 555. Someone tweeted during the election, like, they can pick the winner of American Idol before the commercial, but they can't find the president. Well, thank you so much, Katarina, for taking the time to talk to us. What do you got going on? Is there any, if people want to find you or learn more about your work, where do they hunt you down?
Also, for more on Animal Crossing, you can please check out Loading. It's the journal where you can read Emma Vossen's incredible article, Tom Nook, Capitalist or Comrade, as well as many other great articles edited by Rainforest Scully Blaker and Emily Flynn Jones. Please check it out. People did amazing scholarship, and I'm just happy to talk about these awesome people and their work.
We will absolutely tweet out links to that and also include it on the post if you find us on androidsandassets.ca.
So I'm on Twitter at barnfeline. I'm sure I'll be tagged in tweets by Androids and Assets account. That's where I do a lot of my day-to-day life as well as some of my academic work. Find me on Twitter.
Great.
Tell me whether or not you agree with me, Marshall, or Steven. They'll have a vote in a tweet.
Yeah, we'll do a poll. Whenever I do polls on my Twitter, it makes me feel sad because only one person replies. I'm not a Twitter celebrity by any means. My plan to escape my day job by becoming an influencer is failing, Marshall. It's failing.
The failure there is that you aren't already a millionaire.
Right, yeah. If you want to find out more about us, you can find us on our website, Androids and Assets, or if you want to find us on socials, we are at Asset Droid for Twitter and Instagram, but we don't ever post Instagram, so why'd I even mention it?
If you want to find me on Twitter, I am Econoboid.
And I'm Steve Droids. We hope you have a wonderful day and or night or whatever you got going on. So next time you find yourself whisked away to an island and saddled with an incredible debt, put us on as you toil in the debt peonage and or indenture of your enlightened post-scarcity technocrat master.